Okay. It's Monday, July 20th, and it's study night, and we're looking at God Exalts the Humble. And last week, we looked at Joshua, and that was really cool. We looked at Joshua because Joshua was the servant or the minister of Moses, who was the meekest man in all the earth in his day. And Joshua was subject to him. And then when Moses died, God worked very closely with Joshua, and he built him up, and he encouraged him, and he gave him instructions. And the important things for Joshua to take heed to was, first of all, the written word, because they had one now, you know, because Moses had received it from God and written it down. And God told Joshua, the key to your prosperity is going to be you being faithful to the written word, first of all. Joshua was among the people of Israel. He was the leader, but he was one of them also. So it was important for him to do what everybody was supposed to do. And then he also had the Spirit of God upon him. So he had the written word, and he had God speaking to him directly to give him instructions, wisdom in the situations that he was in. So he had to take heed to both the written word and what he would get from the Spirit of God. And he did it faithfully. And we also looked at how God magnified Joshua in the crossing of the Jordan River, how he dried up the waters of the Jordan River for him and the people. God gave him the words ahead of time to let him know that it was going to happen and that he could tell everybody in the whole nation of Israel that this is what is going to happen. The priests will carry the Ark of the Covenant into the river. The waters are going to dry up right before us, and we'll walk through on dry land onto the other side. And it happened just like God told Joshua and what Joshua told the people. And they even had the stones of witness, you know, the stones from the middle of the river that they put on the opposite shore, and the other stones from the shore that they put in the middle of the river on a heap, so that in generations to come, they could say, this is what happened, this is what God did, and there's evidence of God doing that for us. And God magnified Joshua in the eyes of all the people that day, which is something that God wanted to do. Joshua didn't ask him to do that, but it was something that was important for God to do. And we also looked at 40 years previous to that, how Joshua was one of very few people, I think there were maybe four or five of them, that actually believed God when it came to going into the promised land. You know, there's Joshua and Caleb and Moses and Aaron and Miriam that believed that God would help them conquer that land. The rest of them, they chickened out. They sent in those 12 spies, and 10 of them said, oh, the people there are so big, a lot bigger than we are, a lot stronger than we are. The cities are walled, and we don't have a chance, and we shouldn't go in. And that's not why God and Moses sent those men into the land. They were supposed to describe the land, not to make a decision whether to enter it or not, because God had sworn to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob that he was going to have their seed inherit that land. And them refusing to go in would mean God wouldn't keep his promise to those men that he had such a great relationship with. So God was set to destroy them all and start over with Moses and his family. And Moses said, no, 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 we don't want to do that. You know, forgive the people, pardon them. And God said, okay, I'll pardon them, but they're not going to go in. Anyone who's 20 years old and upward will not go into the land. They'll die in the wilderness over the next 40 years. They would have gone in like today, but 40 years later, their children will go in and they will inherit the land. So it was Joshua was one of the ones that humbled themselves before God at that time to take a stand for God when nobody else did. And that's hard to do sometimes. To go against the popular opinion, there were millions of them that said, let's go back to Egypt. And when Joshua and Caleb stood up for God, those millions of people wanted to stone them and kill them. So Joshua took a bold stand. And when you're humble before God, you see, it's in humility that you believe the word of God, regardless of what the apparent consequences might be. But you just take that stand for God. And Joshua did that. So he humbled himself at that time, and he was exalted afterwards, you see? So 40 years later, when they went into the promised land, Joshua was huge in the eyes of these people. Now, he was like Moses to them. And he was also huge in the eyes of the other people that already lived in the land, is what we're going to see. So this evening, I want to take a look at some of the things that happened after they crossed the Jordan River. I was going to jump right into the attacking of Jericho. However, I noticed some very cool things along the way regarding the topic that we're studying. So we may or may not get to Jericho, but there's things between the Jordan River and Jericho that are really significant regarding God exalting the humble ones, and maybe things that you never considered before, because there's a lot of things I didn't even think to look at, but we'll see, here they are. So in chapter 5 of Joshua, verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass, when all the kings of the Amorites, which were on the side of Jordan westward, and all the kings of the Canaanites, which were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of Jordan from before the children of Israel until we were passed over, that their heart melted, neither was their spirit in them any more because of the children of Israel." They were just scared to death. They knew that 40 years previously, God had parted the Red Sea for these people, and that the whole Egyptian army drowned when they tried to chase after them. Now, these same people crossing the Jordan River had their God part the waters for them. So all these kings who are thinking, oh my goodness, they're coming over here to attack us. We don't stand a chance because their God is doing these things for them. So their heart melted, and there was no spirit in them anymore. Okay? It's like it took their breath away, and they just didn't know what to do, which is a good thing considering what happened next. Verse 2, "At that time the Lord said unto Joshua, Make thee sharp knives," or knives of flint, "and circumcise again the children of Israel the second time. And Joshua made him sharp knives and circumcised the children of Israel at the hill of the foreskins." They probably called it that after everything was over, because there were a lot of them that had to be circumcised. Verse 4 says, "And this is the cause why Joshua did circumcise." And this is really cool, because when you read the Bible, it does not always tell you why something happened, okay? It tells you that it did happen. But in this case, it tells you why it happened, what the cause was, why Joshua had to circumcise everybody. It says, "All the people that came out of Egypt that were males, even all the men of war, died in the wilderness, by the way, after they came out of Egypt." Now, all the people that came out of Egypt were circumcised. But all the people that were born in the wilderness, by the way, as they came forth out of Egypt, them they had not circumcised. Because after a circumcision, there has to be a time of rest and a time of healing. And they never knew when God was going to tell them to pack up their tents and move to a different location. So they did not circumcise the babies when they were born in the wilderness. And 40 years later, there's a lot of people that had not been circumcised. Verse 6 says, "For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness till all the people that were men of war which came out of Egypt were consumed, because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord, unto whom the Lord sware that he would not show them the land which the Lord sware unto their fathers that he would give us, a land that floweth with milk and honey." Okay, very quickly recaps the refusal of the people to go into the land and God's anger over that and the consequences that they had to face. "And their children, whom he raised up in their stead, them Joshua circumcised, for they were uncircumcised, because they had not circumcised them by the way. And it came to pass, when they had done circumcising all the people, that they abode in their places in the camp till they were whole." So when someone is circumcised, if they're a baby, it takes a few days for it to heal. If they're an adult and circumcised, it takes 7 to 10 days for that to heal. And the fact that all the kings of the Amorites and the Canaanites were scared to death of Israel was a very good thing, because them being circumcised put them in a very vulnerable position, right? Maybe some of you remember an incident that happened in the book of Genesis when there was a guy that had sex with one of the daughters of Jacob named Dinah. And he wanted to marry her. So he and his dad came to Jacob and his sons to see if they could make some arrangement. Now, the sons of Jacob were furious that this man had defiled their sister. Okay, he was a Gentile from another nation. He had sex with her. They weren't married. And they were really angry about that. And what they said is, we can't let you marry our sister because you're not circumcised like we are. If you become circumcised, and if everybody in your little city becomes circumcised, then we will let you marry our sister. Okay? And the guy just really fell in love with Dinah, so he agreed to it, and he talked all the other guys in his town to get circumcised, because he said, we will be able to intermarry between this family here. They're very wealthy. They have a lot of livestock. Their livestock will belong to us. We'll all be richer if we do this. And they all said, okay, let's go ahead. So they all got circumcised. And then after they did, right away after, Levi and Simeon, two of the sons of Jacob, they went in and they killed every man in the town. That was easy for them to do because they had just been circumcised and were sore because they hadn't healed yet and they couldn't fight back. So they killed everybody and they took all their stuff and their wives and their children as well. Jacob was very unhappy about this. But that's what those guys did, which tells us that in this situation in Joshua chapter 5, when all the men were circumcised, if the enemy had attacked them, they would not have been able to fight back. But because God had done this great miracle of parting the waters of the Jordan River for them, and they were so awestruck by what God had done for them and were afraid to even approach these people, they were safe. So they were able to stay 7 to 10 days until everybody was healed again. Joshua 5:9 says, And the Lord said unto Joshua, This day have I rolled away the reproach of Egypt from off you. Wherefore the name of the place is called Gilgal, which means to roll, unto this day. But another reason why they had to be circumcised, there are a couple of reasons. One was God had made a covenant with Abraham back in Genesis 17. That was at the time that God changed Abram's name to Abraham and Sarai's name to Sarah. And he said, I'm making a covenant with you. And the covenant is that every male in your household and all of your male children after you need to be circumcised. And Abraham did it that very same day. And that became a thing with Israel. It wasn't just part of the law. This is before the law. God made that covenant with Abraham. And he said, anyone that is not circumcised will be cut off from Israel. Now, they're going into the promised land. This was what God had promised Abraham that he would do. It was vitally important that the people, that the males of Israel, were all circumcised to hold up their end of the covenant that God had made with Abraham, to whom he promised that this land that he had lived in would belong to his seed after him someday. So they had to do this for the sake of that covenant. Another reason why they had to do it was to keep the Passover. It says in the law that no stranger was allowed to eat the Passover unless they were willing to be circumcised. It said no uncircumcised male would be allowed to eat the Passover, and that's the next thing that they were going to do in verse 10. It says, And the children of Israel encamped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at even in the plains of Jericho. And again, because all the kings were afraid of Israel, they didn't bother them at that time either. So they were able to kill the Passover lambs, have the Passover meal, and have that feast of unleavened bread for an additional 7 days. They were able to do all that without being bothered or attacked by their enemies. Now, Passover, what does that have to do with being humbled and exalted? Well, think about what was going on at the time of the first Passover. The king of Egypt had refused to humble himself before God. right? Even God told Moses to tell him, how long will it be before you humble yourself before me? And the king wanted nothing to do with Moses as God. He didn't recognize him. Now, after all the plagues, he kind of caught on that this God is powerful. But even after the first 9 plagues, the king was still belligerent and refused to let the people go and told Moses, you shall see my face no more. And then that's when God had Moses tell him that the firstborn male of every family in Egypt would be killed overnight, as well as the firstborn animal in every family, the animals that they had. And it was the children of Israel, because they sacrificed the Passover lamb, put the blood around the door, and God passed over, or had the destroyer pass over those houses that had the blood on the door. So the children of Israel humbled themselves before God to believe and obey him and carry out the instructions of putting this lamb's blood on their door, and to eat that Passover with the bitter herbs and the unleavened bread, which was called the bread of affliction because it didn't have the leaven, wasn't risen. It wasn't as tasty as bread normally was. It was the kind of bread that they would have to eat because they were in a hurry to get out of there that night and didn't have time to let the bread rise as it normally would. And the bitter herbs. And they were supposed to repeat this every year as a memorial to them of what God had done for them. They had been slaves in Egypt. That's a humble thing, right? They were slaves. They didn't own their own bodies. They had to work forced labor. They were given very little food. They were beaten if they didn't meet their quota of the bricks. They were slaves. So they were at a very low point. But God exalted them. He brought them out of Egypt with a high hand, it says, with silver and gold, because they borrowed jewelry from their neighbors, and they were happy to give it to them when they had the firstborn son of every family was killed. They wanted to get rid of these people as soon as they could. So they left wealthy, they left victorious, they humbled themselves before God, and God exalted them. And then year after year, they were to be reminded that they had been slaves in Egypt and God brought them out, okay? God brought them from that low position to a high position and brought them into a land of great wealth. And they were to also be reminded that the reason why they had all this wealth is God had just given it to them. It wasn't by their smarts, their ability, their shrewdness. It was by the grace of God that they had everything that they had, and they were to remember that. Passover was to be a reminder of that, as well as a foreshadowing of Christ to come. You know, where it says in 1 Corinthians 5 that Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us, right? So Jesus Christ is the Passover lamb. He's the one that gave his life on behalf of everybody else to release them from the bondage of their own sins, which is even bigger than being released from the bondage of being slaves in Egypt, the bondage of their own sins, so that they could be righteous before God, that they could be saved. So that Passover, that was a really big deal, that they were able to celebrate that Passover and have that memorial without any threat from any of the enemies. Now, chapter 5, verse 11, it says, and they did eat of the old corn of the land on the morrow after the Passover, unleavened cakes and parched corn in the self same day. So Passover takes place every year in the springtime at the time of the barley harvest, because it's during that week of unleavened bread that the people were to bring their first fruits of the barley harvest for a wave offering before God. So what's in all the fields around them? Fields of barley that are ripe and ready to eat. The people that own these fields, they are locked up inside their cities. The closest city to them would have been Jericho. And the king of Jericho made a decree that nobody goes out or comes in. They locked the great gates of the city. So the people that had barley fields were not harvesting at this time because they didn't want to go out there and be killed by the Israelites. So the Israelites, they were free to collect the barley from the fields. They could make unleavened cakes out of them during this time of unleavened bread, and parched corn. They could roast the barley kernels and they could eat that. And it says in verse 12 that the manna ceased on the morrow after they had eaten of the old corn of the land. Neither had the children of Israel manna any more, but they did eat of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. So they had food to eat. In fact, wherever they would go throughout the land, there would be barley at this time. 7 weeks later, there'd be a wheat harvest that they could take advantage of. And the land would be theirs. God had given it to them. So it's not like they're stealing from the people that were in the land. God had given them the land, and God is going to help them conquer the land. It's God's will for them to do that. They weren't just doing it on their own. They were doing it at the command of God and in fulfillment of God's promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So they had food to eat. So now they didn't have the manna anymore. For the past 40 years, 6 days a week, God would send them manna that they could gather from the ground. And that manna was like little round things that they could grind into flour and they could bake with. They could prepare it in a number of different ways. And it had all the nutrition that they needed to live and be healthy and strong. Now, they didn't necessarily like manna very much. I don't know if it was very tasty, but they should have been thankful for it. And I think they were most of the time. But there was a time during those 40 years where the people complained to Moses and to God about the manna, how that they were sick of it, eating the same thing day after day after day. And he said, we have nothing to eat but this light bread that we hate. And God was very angry with them at that time. And there was consequences for their complaining. But the manna was provided for them. It was God's way of providing for these millions of people out in the wilderness where there were no grocery stores. There were no farms and fields. It was just wilderness. But God fed them and provided that for them. Now that they're in the promised land, they don't need that anymore. So there wasn't any more manna at this time. But you know, manna also has something to do with God exalting the humble. If you go to Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy 8. And this gives us the reason, or one of the reasons at least, that God provided them specifically with this manna to keep them going. Start in verse 2. And thou shalt remember, this is Moses speaking to the children of Israel shortly before he died. So not long before where we are in Joshua chapter 5. It was probably within a couple of months that Moses addressed the people. And he said, and thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee and suffered thee, or allowed thee to hunger, and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not. So they had stuff to eat that they had never seen before and didn't know what to do with it, except God would tell them. God would give them instructions how to collect it, how much of it to collect, when not to collect it. So he gave them his word regarding this. So he humbled them and suffered them to hunger, and he fed them with manna. Says, which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. So it wasn't just the stuff that he gave them, but the words on what to do with it once they got it and how to get it. He reminded them also that thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, your clothes didn't wear out, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years. Thou shalt also consider in thine heart that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. Therefore thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of oil, olive, and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness, and thou shalt not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass. When thou hast eaten and art full, Then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, lest when thou hast eaten and art full and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up, you know, like exalt yourself. And thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, where you were slaves and couldn't get out, who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint. You know, where Moses struck the rock and the water came out. Who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, and that he might prove thee to do thee good at thy latter end. You see that? So they spent 40 years eating this manna. That was the humble part. Now they're in the promised land and they're starting to eat other food. And I bet it tasted really good to them at this point in their lives, that they really appreciated it. But they should also have appreciated the fact that God kept them alive all that time and gave them everything that they needed. Now, back in Joshua chapter 5, so they circumcised everybody, they had the Passover, and the manna ceased. And we are in verse 13 now. And it came to pass, when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went unto him and said unto him, art thou for us or for our adversaries? And he said, nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord am I now come. So this was an angel. And the word captain is also translated prince or chief. He was a chief angel, what you might call an archangel. So as captain of the host, the army of the Lord, am I now come? And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and did worship and said unto him, what saith my Lord unto his servant? So he showed great respect to this man who is actually an angel of God. He went down on his face. He bowed down. He called himself servant, called him Lord. Not God, but term of respect. You're superior to me. And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, loose thy shoe from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy. And Joshua did so. He obeyed exactly what he was told to do. Now, before we go any further, I want to show that this is a very similar scenario to one that happened in Exodus chapter 3 when Moses saw a burning bush. Okay? Exodus 3 verse 1 says, now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush, and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. And he said, draw not nigh hither. Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. So who's talking? It says God called unto him, but it says that it was an angel of the Lord that was in the bush. So this angel in the burning bush is speaking on behalf of God, okay? Kind of like when we give a word of prophecy, most of the time it's, I, the Lord, thy God. It's as if God is speaking. The person who's speaking is not God himself, but he's speaking on God's behalf. This angel that was in the burning bush was speaking on God's behalf when he said this, in verse 6. Moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Okay, So this is God speaking by way of that angel. The angel was pronouncing the words, but the angel was speaking for God. In Joshua chapter 5, we just read about the captain of the Lord's host. So this person that looked like a man with a drawn sword, when he introduced himself to Joshua, said, "I am the captain of the Lord's host." Now, chapter 6 continues on, and it says, "Now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. And the Lord said unto Joshua," so he's still talking to this man with the drawn sword who is the captain of the Lord's host. So it's either God is now talking to Joshua directly by way of the Spirit, or that the angel is speaking for God. And I believe that is the case, based on the fact that the angel said, "Take your shoe off your foot, you're standing on holy ground," just like the angel at the burning bush did. And then the angel spoke for God, you see. So it's a good indicator that the angel is speaking on behalf of God when he said, "And the Lord said unto Joshua, See, I have given into thine hand Jericho and the king thereof and the mighty men of valor. I have given them to you." They're mighty men. You know, there's a king. Joshua wasn't a king, but he was one who believed God and one that God was directing. And God told him, "I have given you the whole city. I have given you the king thereof, and I've given you the mighty men of valor." And he put it in the past tense before it happened. You see, that means it's absolutely sure. "And ye shall compass the city, all ye men of war, and go round about it, go round about the city once. Thus shalt thou do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear before the ark 7 trumpets of ram's horns. And the 7th day ye shall compass the city 7 times. And the priests shall blow with the trumpets. And it shall come to pass that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when ye hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down flat, and the people shall ascend up, every man straight before him." God is just so cool the way he will tell Joshua or other men of God at other times, but tell them exactly what's going to happen. "Here's what you are to do. Here's what I'm going to do. This is what will occur." And I'm sure Joshua had no trouble believing this, especially after having been through the Jordan River, where God told him ahead of time, this is what's going to happen. The water's going to stand up like a heap upstream. The waters will dry out. The people will go through on dry ground. And then the waters will return. And it happened exactly the way God said it was going to happen. At this point, he has this word of knowledge, word of wisdom, whether it was given to him by God directly or by that angel who was the captain of God's host. He now has that information and those instructions. Now he knows exactly what to do, and Joshua is going to take immediate action on this, which is always the thing to do. When God tells you to do something, drop everything and immediately do what God says. We saw that as a pattern in Abraham's life, with Moses, with others. Don't waste any time. If God tells you to do something, just do it right away. So Joshua the son of Nun called the priests and said unto them, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant, and let 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord." And he said unto the people, so first he addressed the priests, now he's going to address the whole group. Must have had a good, big, booming voice. He said unto the people, "Pass on and compass the city, and let him that is armed pass on before the ark of the Lord." And it came to pass, when Joshua had spoken unto the people, that the 7 priests bearing the 7 trumpets of ram's horns passed on before the Lord, and blew with the trumpets, and the ark of the covenant of the Lord followed them. And the armed men went before the priests that blew with the trumpets, and the re-reward came after the ark, the priests going on and blowing with the trumpets. And Joshua had commanded the people, saying, "Ye shall not shout, nor make any noise with your voice, neither shall a word proceed out of your mouth, until the day I bid you shout, then shall ye shout." That takes a lot of discipline. because you have a bunch of guys together. Someone's going to think of some wisecrack that he's going to tell into the guy next to him to get a laugh out of him, you know. But it was very clear instruction. Don't make a sound. You're not going to shout before it's time to shout. You're not going to speak a word. You're going to be absolutely silent as you march around the city. So the ark of the Lord compassed the city, going about it once. And they came into the camp and lodged in the camp. And Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priest took up the ark of the Lord. And seven priests bearing seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord went on continually and blew with the trumpets. And the armed men went before them, but the rearward came after the ark of the Lord, the priests going on and blowing with the trumpets. And the second day they compassed the city once and returned into the camp. So they did 6 days. So they're following instructions exactly as they are told. And it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early about the dawning of the day and compassed the city after the same manner 7 times. Only on that day they compassed the city 7 times. And it came to pass at the 7th time, when the priests blew with the trumpets, Joshua said unto the people, "Shout, for the Lord hath given you the city. And the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein, to the Lord." That means everything in the city, everything of value, will be dedicated to God. Nobody was allowed to keep anything that they found there. It's the first city that they are attacking, and it's at God's direction, and God had given them instructions regarding this. So the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein, to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot, the innkeeper, shall live, she and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And ye in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest ye make yourselves accursed when ye take of the accursed thing, and make the camp of Israel a curse, and trouble it. So he gave them a warning not to keep anything of value, anything at all. But all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron are consecrated unto the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. So the people shouted when the priests blew with the trumpets, and it came to pass when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. What an exciting time that was. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and ass, with the edge of the sword, because that's what they were instructed to do. But Joshua had said unto the two men that had spied out the country, "Go into the harlot's house, and bring out thence the woman and all that she hath, as ye swear unto her." And the young men that were spies went in, and brought out Rahab and her father and her mother and her brethren and all that she had, and they brought out all her kindred and left them without the camp of Israel. And they burnt the city with fire, and all that was therein, only the silver and the gold and the vessels of brass and the iron, they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. And Joshua saved Rahab the harlot alive, and her father's household, and all that she had, and she dwelleth in Israel even unto this day. If you read Matthew chapter 1, in the genealogy, you'll see Rahab is in the Christ line. She married into the family. So she dwelleth in Israel unto this day, at the time that this was written, because she hid the messengers which Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. And Joshua adjured them at that time, saying, "Cursed be the man before the Lord that riseth up and buildeth this city Jericho. He shall lay the foundation thereof in his firstborn, and in his youngest son shall he set up the gates of it." And that did come to pass. So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was noised throughout all the country. So Joshua, he only did what God told him to do. It was not his strategy to do this. He didn't know how he was going to attack the city until he was told what to do. But he listened and he obeyed, and that takes humility to do that. He knew that he would not get credit for the military strategy because he was just obeying orders from God. But that is actually the wisest thing that anybody could do, if they're doing any endeavor. Do what God tells you. Do what the written word of God says, and you have the Spirit of God upon you. So if God tells you to do something, do exactly that. And Joshua did that. He obeyed the written word of God, and he obeyed what he was told by the Spirit of God upon him, or by the angel that spoke to him as well. If he got a word from God, that's what he did. And because he was obedient to God and didn't rather do his own thing, it says that his fame was noised throughout all the country. That was God's doing. That was God magnifying Joshua. He first magnified Joshua before all the people of Israel when they walked through the Jordan River on dry land. And then he magnified Joshua in what happened at Jericho. Marching around, the walls fell down flat. Sudden and dramatic victory. So Joshua again humbled himself before God. The people humbled themselves before God, and God exalted them, and he exalted Joshua before all the nations that were in that land that he had given to them. So that's enough for tonight. Next week, we'll look at some more things regarding God exalting the humble.